so here? Sorry we're late. We're live now, I think.
Yeah,
guys, give us a sign. Tell us that we're actually here. All right. Sorry, I was busy negotiating a ceasefire in the Gulf. The Strait looks like we got everything under control. I think it's a 30-day ceasefire. Did you read that?
I saw a tweet.
All right. 30 days.
Not really buying yet.
Yeah. 30. Well, we already won, so I don't even understand why it's a, right? Wasn't there a victory? All right. We're back. It's another edition of all new edition of What Are Your Thoughts here on the Compound Channel. First time listeners and viewers, my name is Downtown Josh Brown, here with my co-host Michael Batnick. Michael, say hi.
Hello, hello.
You guys, we're super excited to see everybody that's here for the live. I saw literally every pounder I've ever heard of, plus all sorts of new names and faces. Thank you guys so much for showing up. Last week we broke a record, had over 2,000 people come for the live. We'll see how we do tonight. We have an ad read. We'll get through this, and then we'll get right to the show. We have tons to do. Tonight's show is brought to you by Betterment.
That's right, Josh. Every RIA knows attention. You don't want to turn people away. You don't want to require high minimums, and you want to help clients who are just getting started, because that's where long-term relationships begin. But here's the truth. Those simple accounts, they take a lot of work. Account opening, trading, rebalancing, and before long, your staff and back office are underwater and trying to stay afloat. That's why established RIAs are turning to Betterment Advisor Solutions. It's the platform built for segmenting your book and streamlining those smaller and simpler accounts. Explore what segmentation can do for your business today. Lower your operational lift, but keep your standard of service high, all with Betterment Advisor Solutions. Your biggest regret will be not doing it sooner. Learn more at betterment.com/advisors.
All right.
Visors.
Thanks to Betterment. Not only are they a sponsor, we actually use the service ourselves at Ritholtz, and we appreciate it.
This episode is sponsored by ClearBridge Investments, a manufacturing comeback combined with resilient consumer spending and the tailwinds of monetary and fiscal stimulus, confirm a healthy economic backdrop that should continue to support broadening equity leadership going forward. Position your investment portfolio for wider equity participation with fundamentally driven ClearBridge active equity strategies. ClearBridge, a Franklin Templeton company. Go to clearbridge.com to learn more.
Okay, let's not beat around the bush here. The economy's just not good. It's going in the wrong direction in many ways, not in all ways, but in many ways, and it's super noisy and hard to just stare at any one data point and try to draw a conclusion. And we don't try to do that. But like, we came into January talking about like 4 or 5% GDP, and now we're scraping the bottom. We're talking about 0.7% growth. And I know that number moves and it's varied and it is prone to constant revisions. So it's not the end all be all, but I do not think it's a good economy right now. It's certainly not as good as it was last year and the year before.
It's
mid as hell. And I think the market is sort of reflecting that to some extent. What do you think?
I don't know. The market doesn't really care about the economy. I think there's a
lot
of things going on.
Yes, it does. Chart on.
Which chart?
On Friday, the S&P 500 broke below its 200-day moving average for the first time since May 2025. And then, after the close, Trump tacoed the Iran situation with a tweet about we're in talks with the Iranians, if there's any left, and they want to be cool, and we're going to figure some shit out. And then Iran came out and said, no, nobody's talking to you. There are no deals. There's nothing even being discussed. The market didn't seem to really care. This is like par for the course. And then it looks like today after the close, there was some sort of a ceasefire announcement. And that's great. We like a ceasefire, I guess. But the reality is it doesn't matter that much outside of the price of oil. What to me, I think is really worth talking about. Thank God earnings growth is holding up. I think that's what's keeping the S&P 500 from being down worse than 7%. Mm-hmm. Because almost everything else that you could point to seems to be going in the wrong direction. And I want to show you a few things and just get your read on the situation. So Brian Westbury at First Trust is talking about the hard numbers. real GDP growth for the fourth quarter of last year, according to Atlanta Fed GDP Now, which is a model. They were talking about 5.4% in January. Now it's 0.7%. We've had a bunch of punk labor reports, and private payrolls were up 33,000 per month. Jerome Powell said the other day there's been effectively zero job creation so far this year. And Westbury points out if you pull out healthcare and social assistance, private payrolls are actually down. Manufacturing jobs are down. Retail jobs are down. The inflation numbers are not good either. He calls them bizarre. Producer prices rose 0.7% in February, or up 3.5% over a year ago. But the increases are on the services side, not the good side, which is actually not the thing that people were worried about. And yet here we are. Prices for goods in the PPI are up 2.5% over the last year. Services are up 3.8%. So that's strange. There's some weird stuff going on with consumer prices as well. It's very tough to look at this through the lens of a normal economy because so much of this is never actually normalized from the pandemic. But when you put those things together, it's just not a pretty picture on the hard data side. What are your thoughts?
The thing that drives the economy is consumer spending. And consumer spending is obviously going to be impacted in a bad way by higher gas prices. The good news is the stock market doesn't trade off GDP, but the bad news is the GDP is contracting, I think, because the consumer is probably weakening. And it is a muddied picture, as it almost always is. There's some good, there's some bad. Retail sales are not growing. Consumer spending is pretty sluggish. So I would describe the economy as fine. It's not like the defaults are picking up in a meaningful way. The labor market's soft. Not a lot of hires. Not a lot of fires. Initial jobless claims look totally fine. Continuing claims look totally fine. So it's middle. I would say like it's nothing. It's not great at all, obviously. And it's, I wouldn't say it's terrible. It's somewhere in between.
I think it's terrible because I don't think of the economy as being in a static condition, good or bad.
You think what's terrible?
I think the economy is terrible because I always think about the economy as something that's on its way in one direction or the other. And the direction that it's on its way to is the wrong direction. So that's why I would say terrible. That's why I personally would say this economic situation actually is terrible.
I don't think you know terrible. The word, you don't know what that word means.
Well, I'm not saying it's the worst economy I've ever seen. I just think it's a terrible economy. We have had interest rate cuts. We now have fiscal stimulus in the form of the tax bill that was passed last year, which takes effect this year. We have this AI boom that is absolutely creating economic activity, and you add all those things up, and they're not really helping most people.
Well, it's creating economic anxiety, is what it's creating.
I think it's not great. And you said there's no problems with credit yet, or what did you say? How did you phrase it?
I said credit quality is fine, more or less. Right. I mean, there are pockets of problems.
Yeah, the pockets of problems are getting bigger. This is Peter Brookvar today. Shifting gears to private credit, I'm sure you all saw the Apollo news. Keeping its withdrawal rate at 5%, which is the right thing to do, rather than satisfy the 11% requested. The fact that 11% is being requested is the problem. Also, the Moody's downgrade of the FS KKR Capital Corp private credit fund to junk status. Yes, I do believe some credit issues are surfacing, but will instead state here again the unhealthy relationship between private credit and some in retail with the differing time horizons and views on liquidity. Either way, an increase in redemptions and a rise in default rates will lead to a higher cost of capital for borrowers and a tightening of lending standards. So this is what I mean. It's not in the garbage yet, but that's the direction. So when I say terrible, these are the things that you don't want to see. And here's Peter posted a chart of the LSTA leveraged loan index. I'm not sure I think on the y-axis he's indexing it to 100.
Yeah.
I think he's indexing to 100. But again, we're talking about not the absolute level. We're talking about directionally. This is not the right direction. This is not what we want to see.
Yeah, financial conditions are tightening. and the cost of capital is going up, interest rates going up meaningfully is not really what you want to see. So I'm not here to say that the economy is good by any means. I think terrible is a bit of a stretch. In fact, okay. I know it is. Here's what I will give you, though. It is remarkable to me, and I know we're about to talk about it, that the economy has done even fine considering that the housing market, a third of the economy, is absolutely frozen. Frozen solid.
Ass.
Ass.
The housing market is just absolute ass. Look, chart on. Okay, there's a lot going on here. The top line is the 30-year mortgage rate, which drives a lot. Obviously, if you have a low fire, low hire environment, you're not seeing huge dislocations in the labor market. The only other thing that would have as big of an impact would be what the cost to borrow to buy a home is. And it's stuck above 6%. It almost fell below for like 10 seconds. But this is now multiple years of a 6% plus 30-year mortgage rate. Here's the in the next pane, U.S. existing home inventory. And you can see a pattern of higher lows. Inventories are starting to rise. I wouldn't say that on the surface that's definitely a negative because, you know, I think for a lot of reasons we've been underhoused and we've wanted to see that come back. But I think it's more indicative not of a lot of building, but just a lot of not buying.
Dude, next pay- yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
U.S. housing starts. Okay, we're doing some more building. It's not shooting the lights out, but not the worst thing. The bottom pane, though, really for me is the story. This is U.S. existing home sales, and you can see we are at what looks to be 10-year lows. 4 million U.S. existing home sales. This is year-over-year data. They're showing you when you look at the trend. And to Michael's point, let's call it 2023, it's now almost the middle of 2026. It's basically 3 years of a flatlining U.S. existing home sale. And that wears on people because people that want to sell aren't getting the amount of interest from buyers that they hope they'd get. Prices are affected, et cetera, et cetera. Let me show you one other thing.
Wait, hold on. Before you do that, I'll do you one worse. If you look at U.S. pending home sales, so combining existing and new, all-time low. All-time low. Nothing is happening.
Now, why does that matter? Here's where I want to go. So I say the economy's terrible. This is the most important part of the economy for most Americans outside of whether or not they have a job. This, like one, two, and three is, do I have a job? Okay, great, number one. Number two, what is the situation with whether or not I can buy a house, sell a house? What's my home situation? And then number three probably has something to do with a car. And that's it. It's not the stock market. It's not Bitcoin. This is not the things that really matter to most people. Roughly 65 to 70% of Americans own a home. Housing accounts for 25 to 30% of total household assets. For the median family, it could be 70% of their net worth. Mm-hmm. And that creates maximum sensitivity in the consumer economy, the real economy, to the prices of houses, the availability of houses, what they're worth, whether or not they can be sold. And that is the real wealth effect away from the top of the K. A 10% move in home prices produces a meaningful change in perceived wealth for most households. A 10% move in stocks doesn't really change all that much on the ground for the economy. And here is the Case-Shiller 20 home price index. So these are the 20 biggest housing markets in the United States averaged. And what you can see here is we may be going negative in home prices on a year-over-year basis. Home prices are up 1.4% year-over-year, which obviously is not the end of the world. But
This is not the sluggish story. The story is the chart that shows the number of home buyers. This is the problem. This is the whole kit and caboodle, so to speak. This is the opposite of the pandemic. When you listed a house, you sold the house in 20 minutes, best and final, who's going to one up it, right? Now, there are The ratio of sellers to buyers is in a historic imbalance. And the problem
is, it's almost 2 to 1 for the people listening. It's 2 million versus 1.3 million buyers.
So the big problem, I mean, this is, you're looking at it, but it's that home prices aren't budging. They're not coming down, and they probably will, and they definitely have to. And you combine that with the fact that mortgage rates are going in the wrong direction. It's really ugly, and it's not getting better. Yeah.
So Redfin says there were 630,000 more sellers than buyers in February.
Yeah, that's that chart. It's gross.
46.3% more sellers than buyers. That is the largest gap since Redfin began tracking this in 2013, and a huge jump from this time last year when there were 29% more sellers than buyers, and we didn't think that was great. This is way worse, and it's seasonally adjusted, which means this is not just about, oh, it's March, wait till May. It's a bigger story. There are 2 million people selling a house right now, and just not enough interest in buying. One other thing, one of the big home builders, Lennar, in order to maintain sales in the current environment, they spent an average of 14% on the final sales price on incentives in the first quarter of this year, which is back to 2010 levels. They had to do this shit after the housing crisis. Insane. So in other words, a $450,000 home sold with a 14% incentive rate translates to Lennar handing over $63,000 to the buyer in the form of incentives. And here's a chart. What you're looking at is Lennar's sales incentives on home deliveries as a percentage of the revenue of that home. And you can see this 14% level is completely abnormal, way elevated versus our experience in the last 10 years. And obviously they can't keep doing, you can do that to get through a weak season. You can't just do that forever.
So needless to say, the stock got whacked hard. It's down. It's in a 50% drawdown.
They whacked it off, Michael.
Big time. And it's obviously not just Lennar. You look at Pulte, DR, all of the home building suppliers. I said this to Ben today on the pod. A great example of how difficult individual stock picking is. Since April 2021, there have been $9 trillion worth of cumulative home sales. Actually, $9 trillion. You can only imagine how much of that flowed through to Home Depot's bottom line. Tens of billions of dollars. Literally.
Oh, yeah.
The stock is flat since then.
Yeah. So, right. So what does it take for that thing to go up? What's this collection of charts you have here?
So just tying a bow on this, where are we in the economy? Jobless claims are strong. Continuing claims are sort of elevated. Redbook sales are strong. Travel, we'll talk about that later, is strong. Card spending, we know it's K-shaped. Bankruptcies are rising, not great. Business formation is surging. We don't speak about that often, but maybe we'll do that 1 week. Bank loan growth
is slowing. Out of desperation.
Well, I don't know about that. There's a lot of technology that's embedded in that. It's never been easier. But anyway, it is a mixed economy for sure. And if I'd say, is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Obviously, it's getting worse.
Hence, terrible.
Not the same thing. All right. Let's do this. We're going to talk about the retail trader washout. And I'll open the story by sharing this. Citadel Securities nets record $12 billion trading haul in 2025, up 25% from the previous full year.
Oh my God.
And you could think of Citadel as the rake. They are the market maker. Every time you buy an option or sell an option or this or that, they're just scraping pennies every day. A lot of pennies. So they absolutely feasted on retail activity, which is now 25% of the market. Obviously, it's pulled back since. So some charts from Gungeon that showed that retail traders have retreated. All right, we're looking at a chart of retail volumes, and the chart shows the retail as a percentage of total single stock volumes over a five-day period. And it hit a fever peak, I should say, a crescendo, if you will, of 15% and has cooled off dramatically.
When was that? December?
December.
Yeah. And this is like off, like literally off a cliff. But does, and I'm trying to figure out, does that happen in a lot of Januaries? I'm just looking back at the chart and I'm trying to see.
I don't think this is a seasonal thing. I think it's a stock market thing. The stock market sucks and they're getting burned. We'll get to that more in a second. Zero DTE options. So options that expire in 25 minutes after you buy them are near a 1 year low as a share of total S&P contracts. And I think this is,
That's the gambler. That's the gamblers running out of money after five or six trades went against them. It's just not fun anymore.
It's not fun anymore.
That's the reality. And I get it. The dispersion in the market, the rotations, the fact that some of the most popular stocks, not just amongst retail, but like period, are among the biggest losers this year. Stocks that no one's ever heard of are leading the market. It's not a retail market. You know what two of the biggest stealth winners are in the market this year?
SanDisk and Ciena. Like,
throw those out. Those are fun. AT&T and Verizon.
Right. Not fun.
No retail investor is trading that shit.
Like, that's Jenny Harrington. That's Jenny Harrington. Credit to her.
Yeah. And Jenny's no fun. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. So Goldman says Thursday saw the most selling from long only investors across their trading floor since they began tracking it in 2022. And of course, the lack of activity from retail investors is whacking off Robinhood in a real way. The stock is down 54% from its highs.
I mean, this thing is trading like they had horrible news. I don't think Robinhood has had horrible news. They did.
So options are the number one moneymaker.
Yeah.
Crypto number two. And the buy the dip keeps dipping. Mm. So it's, listen, these people, these traders can come back in a blink. So I'm not in any way, shape or form suggesting that they're gone forever, but a lot of the things that kept them coming back, obviously, is just not working.
What do you mean these people? You talking about my Gen Z friends? They'll be back.
Of course they will.
And they'll come back smarter.
Of course they will.
I think 2024 and 2025 were sort of toxic environments in that they gave people, or 23 too for that matter, I basically think we had a 3 year period of time that gave people a false sense of ability. And the dips were bought quickly. The glamour stocks led the market. There's a lot of intuitive stuff going on, like AI is a hot theme, therefore buy all these AI stocks, and they went up. You had things like Oracle doubling. Like, I just think it was an environment that lent itself to like retail alpha, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah, the trader from 23 to 25 kicked the shit out of professionals. Yeah.
And now this year, you just have like stocks that the retail trader is not interested in or aware of are leading the market.
They're not buying energy stocks and industrials. They're just not. They haven't heard of these names.
They've never been in a market environment where these names led. I think industrials as a sector have the most stocks that are still up, or something like that. These are not Robin Hood stocks. These are companies that make boilers and fences. Like, these are, they don't rise to the level of awareness for the Gen Z investor.
You know what stock is rightly getting whacked in a big way? And this goes to the hurting consumer, because this is quite literally the first thing that you stop doing. DoorDash. DoorDash is in a 45% drawdown.
Yeah. When the first thing to go. That's right. When the cost to fill your tank goes up 30% in a month.
Nah, dude. That's where you're cutting back. And you find that fucking food.
That's right.
Once you
make a grilled cheese, get off your ass and cook something. All right. I'm now at the point where I'm reading a Halo article every day. Some days three, five. I can't even keep track. Dude,
Bloomberg has a Halo section on their website.
I'm going to sue everybody. I don't know what else to do.
Be flattered. That's all. That's all you can do.
I'm super flattered and litigious, and I'm not even asking for money. I just want people to be like, Downtown Josh Brown made this up, popularized it, coined it, and we're using it as the premise for yet another research report, another article.
It's in the public domain. You did a public service.
But I want something. So I'm not asking for a lot. I just want somebody to be like,
you want credit.
Credit?
You keep asking for it. You got it. You have the credit. Nobody doesn't know that it's yours.
I did think this was a good article. I emailed the reporter. Don't you worry. I was like, hey, you know who I am? It's my shit. You're writing about my shit. This is Bloomberg. Private capital firms are starting to swap software systems for hard hats as the AI boom forces the industry into a quick rethink of its priorities. Blackstone, Bain, and Brookfield have all been talking of an increased focus on heavy assets with low obsolescence. This so-called halo trade is targeting makers of everything from ship engines to conveyor belts that are considered less likely to be made extinct by AI. And then they got a quote from Jonathan Gray at Blackstone about it. And then they said it's also in Europe. And
it's global.
Halo is everywhere.
Did you ask where that chart came from? They showed a chart in the article that shows that counts the number of mentions of the word halo, and it goes back several years. I don't understand what.
No, it's not. Like it says data based on prepared remarks and management answers. No way. No way. No. No way. You can't tell me on 200 conference calls in 2021. CEO said the word halo.
It says literally mentions of halo in transcripts uploaded to Bloomberg Terminal. Nobody said the word halo unless it was by accident in 2021.
That's my point. What am I looking at? You know what this is like? You know the movie where the guy wakes, he's a singer-songwriter. He wakes up in a world where nobody knows the Beatles ever existed.
Yeah. Yesterday.
And he becomes the biggest star in the world because he starts recording "I Want to Hold Your Hand," and he becomes the biggest. Like, what do you mean? Like, did I just wake up in a world where people were using this term that I invented 2 months ago in 2021? What is this chart? What are these people trying to do to me? I guess.
Did you actually steal it from somebody else? I'll kill you.
I'll take my tire thumper and I'll put an end to you. All right.
All right.
What is this? Put the chart up. Let's do the chart.
I think this is kind of interesting.
This looks good. You getting long here?
No, I'm not. But for all the hemming and hawing, listen.
What's the nominal yield right now?
It's March 24th. This thing has obviously puked. This is by the way, this is an ETF of the publicly liquid
BDCs.
Blech. And it's gone sideways since February 3rd.
Yo,
now, I am not calling a bottom. I'm not. But here's what I want to say about these things.
Where did it come from? It's 17, it went to 12, and it was at 17, it was probably yielding 8%. What is it yielding now? 13? Not that they're going to pay any of that out.
You know how we say all the time that news follows price. If the stocks aren't going a certain direction, like wherever the stocks are going, that's the narrative that is written about it.
Usually, yeah.
Almost always. Sometimes there are news events that change.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that.
This is really interesting because I'm not faulting entirely the media for writing about this. How could they not? It's juicy. It's salacious. The asset class has 10x'd. It's transparent. It's high fees. Like, they should be covering it. But, and also, if they didn't, or if they stopped, and I know that's not their job, the prices would not be doing this. Or maybe not the prices, but like, it's really interesting for all the hemming and hawing, and we're going to continue to cover it. A bad year for the private BDCs, and these are public. Like, what does a bad year look like for Cliffwater? Because 2008 was down 6% from the index. So is a bad year down 2%? That'd be really bad. It's just kind of hilarious that we're spending this much time, as we should and we will, and yet the context is this thing could fall 2%, and that would be really, really, really bad.
I guess I'm not following what you mean. It already fell These are the public ones. Substantially more than 2%.
These are the public
ones. Oh, you're talking about the private ones. Well, I think the story here is not about the price of the public BDCs or the private BDCs. I think the story is we have a situation where ordinary Muppet money was herded into 20 or 30 different products, some public, some private. Unfortunately, in the case of the private BDCs, the entryway is the size of a football field and the exit is the size of a phone booth. And everybody wants out at the same time because they think if they don't get out now, the prices will be worse. And maybe even if there are advisors in the mix, which of course there are, the reputational risk as well. And that's really the story. And I know I know the people that cover this professionally and are investors, they're focused on the prices and the values and the NAV and the discounts. And I get that. I'm saying, like, for the media, the story is about, oh my God, they did it again. They got all these regular people to buy all these bizarre instruments and now it's going bad. And why they really love this is every single person that runs one of these private equity firms also owns a professional sports team.
Yeah.
They are monopoly men. They are billionaires with capital B's, and the media just, they fucking love it. It's like catnip.
So
they love
it. It's a lot of, I knew this is bullshit. So yeah. Throw this chart up.
This is the
NAV of Ares publicly traded. You could buy tomorrow. Not saying you should. This is a chart of the NAV. So not the price, okay?
The net asset value of all the assets.
Right.
And based on their own calculations, it needs to be said.
So it's worse than that. It's based on calculations of a third party that they pay to come up with the NAV.
Yeah.
So show the next chart. So that's the public one, and this is the private one. And this is the historical performance of Apollo's debt solution BDC.
Right. And this doesn't trade. This does not trade.
This does so not this, trade.
They tell and you this, what it's worth every time they put out a report.
This line of up and to the right with zero interruptions, and there has been some shit between January 2022 and now. Now it went down a little bit. Actually, went down more than a little bit. But since then, straight up and to the right, this is the part that the media rightfully says, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on. You're telling investors that you've got 600 basis points above SOFR, no volatility,
yeah,
up and to the right only, always semi-liquidity. All right, okay. I want to use Apollo again. Look at this portfolio. This is for their private BDC. They don't have a public one. This is for Apollo's private BDC. Show the portfolio overview. Show the industry diversification, John. Do we not have that? Oh, I put this in late. My bad. All right. Anyway, this is 100% first lien, 96% floating rate. And unlike BCred, who I said 26% of the portfolio is software related. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
With Apollo, it's 12%. There we go.
We have, thank you. We have it.
Okay. So look at this industry diversification. It's 12% software, 7% healthcare providers and services, 6% financial services.
Look how many slices there are.
All right, so my point is, dude, this is not going to blow up, and I don't know anything. Okay, maybe I look like a giant jackass, but these are not dumb people. In fact, they're the opposite.
Yeah, but this is the problem. You're referencing Apollo. They are the best in the world at what they do. There's 50 other companies in the same space that are not as good at Apollo, don't have the pedigree, don't have the track record, don't have the amount of analysts covering all of these credits that are in these portfolios. Like, you can't show the gold standard and draw, just like you wouldn't show the worst player in the industry this is what it all looks like.
So the point is, they are getting swept up in this just like everybody else. There's no reason why they would be immune. The stock is down 40%.
Yeah.
And historic default rates, whatever they are. Like, I guess my point is this. This stock is trading like their loans are going to absolutely get cremated. And maybe they will.
I don't think so. I don't think the stock is down 40% because people think Apollo's whole portfolio of loans is going to blow up. I think you're wrong. I think the stock is down 40% because it went up 100% on the expectation that Apollo was going to be able to grow 20% a year for the next 5 years as it onboarded 20 million retail investors. And that dream has gone up in smoke, and with it, the multiple associated with that sort of growth. And what you're seeing is give back from the gains. This was one of the big winners over the last few years as private equity and private credit came into their own on Wall Street. This stock went up huge. So did Blackstone. So they all did. But this one went up a lot. And what you're seeing now is not a referendum on the credit quality of their loan portfolio. No way. This would be down way more. What's actually going on is people are saying, oh, shit, worst fundraising environment ever coming up for the next 1 to 3 years while they wait for us all to forget about the redemptions and the asset gating. And that's the reality. And people could look at it and say, oh, it's cheap. Yeah, probably is. It's also going to be left for dead. I don't think people are going to forget so easily.
I agree.
All right. That's what you're witnessing here.
I completely agree. Everything you just said is correct. The difference.
I'm really good at this.
The difference between the BDCs and the interval funds, they look almost identical. The difference is the interval funds have a legal obligation to buy back up to 5% of the shares outstanding on a quarterly basis.
Yeah.
And so Cliffwater is the biggest interval fund, and they will be buying back 5% of shares for who knows how long. And who knows how long their credit facilities last. And who knows if they have to offload some of the loans. No, this is all to be determined. This could blow over. I don't think it's going to. It's going to be a while. The loans could turn out to be fine and people could settle down. But the private BDCs have no legal obligation. Now, there could be bigger problems if they just say, no, we're just not doing it. We're not giving you guys money back this quarter. It would impair. It's for the betterment of the shareholders. We'll see how this plays out. But it is obviously not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the apologists for the space and the defenders have said, well, look at BREIT. They were in the, you know, they had their turn in the sleeping bag as everybody beat them with bars of soap and batteries and socks. I know it's oddly specific, but I went to a very violent summer camp. They had their time. And then BREIT eventually was able to say, okay, redemptions are no longer an issue. Call us whatever you want. You could have back because the ship was righted. They steadied the ship. They lasted. They lived through it. And so a lot of people have said that's what will happen here. And maybe that's true. And I hope so. I just don't know that this is going to go the same way. A real estate portfolio has a tangible quality to it. That a portfolio that is 40% SaaS software just doesn't have.
Ding, ding, ding. The problem is these companies say, listen, the historic default rate is this, and the historic recovery rate is 94 cents on the dollar. We're senior secured. We get paid back. Yeah, the equity will get wiped out. We'll get paid back. With what? There's no factories or land or inventory. It's software.
Right.
What are you getting paid back with?
That's right.
So a better comp, and also not apples to apples, is I follow the Substack, Covenant Light, who writes all about this type of stuff. And Apollo was in the middle of it. Remember the energy trade, the unwind of 2014, 2015? They've been through that with this. So they survived. Listen, they're going to survive this. I mean, let's not be ridiculous here. But it is going to be a very slow bleed. And where it ends, nobody knows. All right, let's keep it moving. We just did a lot on that.
I mean, do you want the good news?
I love good news.
New opportunities are being created. If you do not have money at risk now and you were ever interested in exploring adding private credit to your portfolio, over the next year, you're going to get a crack at, I think, some distressed valuations in the space. And choose your fund very carefully. If this is something that you want to do, definitely a better entry than 2 years ago when it looked Madoff-esque. Month it's up. I can't talk.
No, believe me.
I won't be the one that gives you the timing of it.
I only mean literally the prices have not come down yet. And this is part of the problem, is that there is leverage here. And if these companies are tapping their credit facilities at the banks and they can't mark down their loans, because guess what? Some of their covenants get triggered or tripped by the banks. It's like, wait a minute, you can't have them with a 3x leverage. Like, no, you got to sell. We need some money, like a margin call.
So then that's more selling of portfolio holdings, which puts more pressure on the overall asset class.
It's not great.
I'm not saying like rush off the sideline. I'm saying if you were interested in the space, okay, it's about to come your way. You didn't have to chase it.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the stock market. It's not all bad. Okay.
So software got whacked off again today. I mean, that was a baby bounce, dude. So throw this chart on the screen.
I didn't believe the bounce on Monday.
Okay.
To my credit.
We had a rotation today, which is good. Financial stopped going down. You like that? At least the big banks stopped going down. We had 260 stocks, I think, were up today, but the NASDAQ was more decliners than advancers.
Does Microsoft go down every day?
Pretty much. So let's go through some charts. This is IGV. It's Salesforce. It's
tire Oracle, thumped.
It's Microsoft.
Tire this thumped. This chart looks like it looked me the wrong way on the subway. It's just
so this thing went from like 120 to 75, and it, you know, it's a baby bounce, and it can't even sustain that for a minute. Like, no, not it's good.
Disgusting.
Not good. Next chart, please. I threw two in IGV here. Okay, perfect. Thank you, John. Microsoft. Are you kidding me?
I mean, it's got like, it looks like the devil character from South Park. Look at the horns at the top. It looks like Satan. How could you buy this? Every candle is redder and longer than the one before.
I will be buying the absolute sniz out of Microsoft, but not until it stops going down.
Support at 350.
Maybe. We'll see.
That was the Liberation Day bounce at 350 was a false breakdown, and then that gap up is when Trump tacoed.
I need a down 4% day that closes up 2%. When that happens, I'll buy it, but not before that. And now they're getting to Google.
Why not wait? Can we pause on Microsoft? Yeah. Why not just buy calls? You don't want to be long this stock. You just want the bounce, right? You see it at 355. Just buy the 375 calls. Isn't that like a base? It's a base hit. It's a base hit, but you commit very little capital, and it's not like a position in your portfolio.
Okay, I will report back on that. I like where your head's at. Alphabet, like the secular winner, has now broken below previous support. Not great.
I wrote this up in Best Stocks of the Market with Sean yesterday, and I basically said this: I hate this chart. Sometimes not everything we write is like, go buy this. We said, lay off Alphabet here. It's in no man's land technically. And we said, Apple looks like it's about to break its 200 day. And that might've happened today. So I look at these stocks and I understand what's happening. They're being used as a source of funds.
Yeah.
And they're big and there's a lot of money and there's a lot of liquidity in these stocks and people want liquidity right now.
All right.
And they're just pulling it out.
Last chart. Chart Kid made this for me. I wanted him to show me since software bottomed on 223, what stocks, so there was a lot of bounces, but as we can see on the left, a lot of stocks bounced and rolled over. They did not keep their bounce. A lot of stocks did. So here's the stocks that did not bounce. And there's others, but these are particularly the stocks that have been in the AI disrupted camp. Okay. Mm-hmm. So S&P Global, a stock that I bought and sold, rolled over big time. Same thing with CrowdStrike. Same thing with Salesforce, ServiceNow, Workday, Adobe, and FICO. Forget about it. My God. And in the winter camp.
We said this. We said with those stocks, you can't prove a negative. The sellers are basically saying, I know they are in some way disrupted. I don't know the extent. Therefore, I'm selling every up day until I lower my risk here. The sellers are not saying like, what's the valuation?
No.
It's a much more existential issue here. And you can't, none of those, ServiceNow can't come out and say, all right, we've proved it. Eureka. Yeah. Here are the results from the lab. We are 100% undisruptible. Nobody could say it.
Knowing what little I know, I do believe that this is overblown. I do believe that the incumbents are ultimately going to be the biggest beneficiaries.
Prove
totally
it.
Totally erroneous, depending on your time frame.
Prove
right
it.
Now,
right, prove it.
Right now, the sellers have the sellers are in control. Period. Hard stop. That's it. And they might look foolish.
Some of those stocks have insider buying. Doesn't matter. Nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cares. Yeah. So are these a good buy? Well, what's your risk tolerance? How much tolerance for pain do you have? Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Stocks that did stick the landing. Dell, Expedia. That's a surprise to me. Netflix, and even that rolled over pretty hard today. So maybe that didn't. Intuit, same deal. Actually, you know what? A lot of these stocks rolled over today. Palantir, Block. So yeah, man, it's hard. The sellers are in control right now of these names.
Those news clips with the 5-hour lines at Atlanta Airport and LaGuardia.
Could you imagine?
But those are like advertisements for being long Expedia. Because look at what people are willing to endure. In addition to the higher jet fuel price, raising ticket prices, people are standing in LaGuardia for 5 hours just to get somewhere.
Yeah.
That's super bullish Expedia in an alternate universe. All right, we're going to do this college grad unemployment thing. I'm telling you, I think I'm on to something. I think this is going to be a politically explosive issue come June when yet another wave of college graduates leaves the commencement ceremony, spends 30 days hunting for a job, looks at mom and dad, and goes, I don't know what you want me to do. And I know that this is an acute thing to me because I'm in this. And so I know part of this is like me projecting this onto everyone, but it's too big to ignore. It's too big to ignore. Copilot tools, LLM tools, these things are carrying out the exact functions that had formerly been the province of the college-aged, college grad Excel monkey for decades. And hiring managers at companies are being told, stop. Don't bring on, how many college grads do we normally hire? 60? Okay, hire 10, let's see what happens. Hire 10, give the older people more AI. Let's see what happens. Axios wrote about this today. Chart on. What you're looking at here is 1,000 US adults. The gold line is non-college grads, and the pink line is college grads. And they're asking people what they think. Is this a good time to find a quality job? And as you can see, in the non-college grad camp, things look okay. 44% says yes, it is. 27% college grads say it is a good time to find a job, which means almost three quarters say that it's not. Workers with higher levels of formal education are way less optimistic than those with less school. And just to like put a bow on this, that is the widest gap on record going back to 2001. So it always was the case that people with college degrees were more confident about whether or not it was a good time to get a job than people without college degrees. And that is now flipped and the gap is exploding. The unemployment rate for college grads is now 6%. For the overall economy, it's like 4.2 or 4.3. And then they took a look at Indeed. There were 29% fewer job listings for software developers in March than there were pre-pandemic. That is massive industry shrinking. 27% fewer marketing jobs, 36% fewer listings for media and communications roles. These are college education jobs, mm-hmm. and they are literally vanishing right before your eyes. We made two charts. I know Sean and Matt worked on these. I want to put these up. This is a beaut. This is unemployment rates for recent graduates versus all workers. And I want you to pay attention, Michael and audience, to the red. This has been a trend that's been in force since the pandemic and has gone into hyperdrive since the advent of ChatGPT. And when the bars on the bottom are in the red, that is a higher unemployment for recent grads versus all workers. Our entire lives, this goes back to 1990, we have never been in an environment where it was harder for a college-educated kid to get a job than for a non-educated kid to get a job. Our entire lives until the last 5 years. And now it's picking up steam. Let's do this unemployment by major. Now, don't laugh at people that got an anthropology degree. You ain't so brilliant yourself, because look what's right below that. Computer engineering, 7.8% unemployment rate. Computer engineering, let me repeat. Computer engineering, 8% unemployment. Computer science, 7% unemployment. Remember 10 years ago when you laughed at people and said, learn to code? Those are those people. 8% unemployment for the people that, quote, learn to code. So you could laugh at the art history people and the environmental studies people, and you can do that if you want. You're going to laugh at a computer science major. The 10 majors with the lowest unemployment: special ed, miscellaneous education, elementary education. So that's tax dollars, guys. Agriculture, foreign language, geography, engineering, social services, nursing, and secondary education. So plenty of employment still in government-supported types of jobs and in education, and not much else. So we have a lot of people educating people who are going to come out of school and not have anything to do. And it looks like it's getting worse, and I do think this will become a political issue. And the AI thing is going to be under the microscope like never before. And you're going to see, I don't know if it's the Republicans or the Democrats, but somebody's going to push back on all this and ask the question out loud, why are we allowing this? And I'm not telling people how to feel about the issue, but I really do think it's going to come to a head this summer. What do you think?
I agree with everything you said. I think this is terrible. I'm surprised that it's only 5.6% or 6 point, whatever it is. I would have thought it would be higher. I don't know how this manifests itself politically. I don't know what the solutions are.
I think that number will be 6 to 7% by the time this next wave of college grads, they don't graduate until May.
Yeah. Who's hiring these kids?
I mean, many of them will get hired, but less than last year, certainly less than the year before. And again, it's not that there are no jobs. It's not the labor market is crashing. It's a slow to hire environment because people are like, well, let's just see. Let's wait and see what all this AI that we're spending all this money on. Let's see what it can really do before we just add the requisite body count that we've been that we've been accustomed to adding each year, like almost on automatic. Let's not be automatic. Let's hang tight. And you're seeing that sentiment multiplied by, I don't know, 8 million businesses, large and small. And this is what the net result is. And people are not going to be happy.
Here's one area that I could see hiring continue at the pace that it was historically. Heavily regulated companies, banks, for example, that need to carry favor in Washington. They say, you hired 2,000 kids last year. You're not hiring one less than 2,000 kids this year. Something like that. I know that's a Band-Aid.
JP Morgan spent the last 3 years telling people that they're basically automating their own jobs. And then it's not even about laying people off. It's the not hiring.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the labor statistics that we're all citing to say that the economy's pretty good, it's holding up, it's hanging in there, it's misleading. It's older people at the top of the income scale who just aren't worth replacing because the AI is not skilled. Those people are fine. Young people who now not only can't afford to buy a house, also can't afford to fill their car's gas tank and have no idea where they're going to get hired. It almost doesn't matter what they have a degree in.
I'm telling you, it's terrible, and I mean it. I agree.
Okay. Shouldn't be this hard.
I think the biggest like humanitarian, I don't know, crisis is a strong word, but this is the big one. This is really bad.
If anyone is still out there and hasn't killed themselves yet, let's do make the case.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned that that what's going on in the airport is a great case for Expedia. I actually made the case last year. I don't know if you remember this. In September, I made the case for Clear, and my case was not scientific. It was just I heard her on Patrick O'Shaughnessy's podcast. And I remember she said, I am a f***ing animal and I wanted to bet on her and I never did. And the stock is absolutely on fire for reasons that are Very, very obvious.
Why did you buy it? You just forgot to buy it?
I just kind of forgot about it. Okay. John, let's throw the stock price up there.
Yeah.
So massive buying, massive breakout, huge volume.
When did you tell us about this?
September.
Holy shit. It was like $30.
Yeah. So, probably not the best entrance today, but if it has a low volume pullback, I probably still won't buy it.
Is just clear at the airport.
Like, it's just clear
like
at the airport.
The eye scan. That's it.
So I'm sure.
So people don't cancel this. They get a free, they get a free trial and then they start paying.
The retention ratio is actually less good than I thought. It's like 92%. It's not bad. They actually stopped reporting it, which is a little bit concerning, but ironically, I'm sure that people that pay for Clear were losing their goddamn minds because that was probably no better than TSA. I mean, I'm sure it was a little bit better, but I bet you the Clear line at LaGuardia was at the exit at this point. So the company is working, the margins are improving, the cash flow is accelerating, but what an unbelievable commercial this experience has been for Clear.
Yes. Are those people like speed running the security line, the people that have Clear?
Probably not. But
it's probably better.
But it's probably terrible because I've been in many Clears around the country where there's just too many people. There's nothing they could do about it. I don't know how you get more monitors. But I was at Miami 2 weeks ago and I went straight through with Clear. It was wonderful. So I don't know. But
well, don't worry. They sent ICE to the airport to help with the TSA lines. And if the militias are not successful at speeding things up, they will send in UFC fighters, I'm told. I feel like it'll be fine. All right, let's do mystery chart and then we'll get out of here. My mystery chart, please pop it up for us. All right, this is a sector of stocks. It's global and probably the only one that looks like this right now.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear what you think it is.
Well, these have to be energy stocks.
Final answer?
No. What am I looking at here?
You're looking at stock charts.
Oh, individual stocks.
They're all different stocks. And I told you it's international. Some of them trade in different currencies. Okay, so Sean normalized it.
Final answer.
Yeah. Okay. You'd be wrong, sir. Pop it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the only other sector that's up.
Yep. That's good stuff.
You made a good guess. You probably made the guess that I would have made because I don't know what these charts look like. Yeah. Chart back on, please. This is SK Hynix, Samsung, SanDisk, Micron, Western Digital. These stocks are just, I don't know, even know what to say. This is this year's bubble. It'll get real ugly for the people that buy it today, I assume. Although maybe I would have said that a week ago and they're all up another 15%. So
just sell before everybody else does.
Sell before everyone else does. All right, great job with the chart, Sean and John. Thank you, guys. All right. Hey, everybody. Did you know tomorrow is Wednesday, which means an all-new Animal Spirits podcast with Michael and Ben for the YouTubers right here on our Compound YouTube channel, Spotify, Apple, anywhere fine podcasts are played. We'll have an all-new Ask the Compound after that. That'll be live. Duncan and Ben Carlson are taking your questions. So get those questions into us. What is the email address, guys? I think it's
askthecompoundshow@gmail.com.
askthecompoundshow@gmail.com. If you want to have your question featured by Ben and Duncan and their special guests, on Friday we'll have an all-new Compound and Friends. Can't wait to see you then. Thank you guys for listening. God bless. Good night.
Ritholtz Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Ritholtz Wealth Management and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. Nothing on this podcast should be construed as and may not be used in connection with an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy or hold an interest in any security or investment product. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. No advice may be rendered by Ritholtz Wealth Management unless a client service agreement is in place.